Welcome to the gathering at the Cosmic Fire Summit, where we've invited shamanic earth-based healers, teachers, thought leaders, and allies to light the way into our future. During these times of great change and transformation, it's important for each one of us to find our own courageous solutions for the problems of today's world. As we gather together around the cosmic fire, wisdom and medicine will be shared for creating holistic health and well-being, harmonious living, real sustainability, and the potential for both personal and global change. The gathering at the Cosmic Fire Summit is brought to you by Shamans Directory, an online global platform for shamanic earth-based services. At Shamans Directory, we believe that it's time to bring shamanic earth-based wisdom and medicine to the forefront of people's minds when considering our overall health and well-being and the future of our planet. I'm Wake, one of your hosts at the Cosmic Fire, and I'm delighted to welcome Shane Case. Welcome, Shane.
Thank you so much.
Shane is a mother, medicine person, writer, and a storyteller in the oral tradition, who has dedicated herself to listening to the languages of nature to reclaim her ancestral stories. Shane is of mixed race German and Minikanju Lakota lineages and is an enrolled member of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe and currently resides in Portland, Oregon. In addition to her one-to-one healing practice, she also leads the Under the Eagle's Wing mentorship program, in which she helps people reconnect with their own cultural heritage. Through direct teaching, meditation, storytelling, and experiential learning. Open registration for the 2024 program is now available. Her passion work is the Toki Amani Win Project, which aims to make medicines from native plants at sacred Lakota sites and distribute these medicines to Indigenous people and to those who are needing them. Welcome, Shane, to the Shamans Directory Summit. Our topic for today, claiming the medicine bundle within you. I'd love to hear at the beginning about your early childhood and the way that you experienced life and the alternative realities that were shown to you in those early years.
Yeah. First, I want to say Shane Case Miachiapi. I'm Minikanju Lakota. I like to introduce myself more in the Lakota way, just because it's good for me to practice speaking my mother tongue, and it also makes me feel like my ancestors are with me when I am speaking with them. So my early childhood, you know, I was born in Germany. My mother is German American and my father is Lakota. And I spent some years, I don't remember them, very, very early years in Germany. And then we moved to South Dakota, where my father's family all still lives and is from. And, you know, my early childhood, I was a pretty, I would say, feral child. My parents were young teenagers and up to their own, let's just say to their own. And so I feel like I was more raised less by the humans and more by the plants. And my earliest childhood memories were really making medicine, and I didn't even know that's what I was doing. You know, I would spend all day in the prairie picking things, berries and leaves and roots and mud, and I'd wait for the sun to come up and come down, and I would make these concoctions, and then I would just try to give them to the feral dogs on the res, which of course, them being way smarter than us, would always refuse. But I, you know, in that time of being with the plants, I never felt alone, and I really developed, because nobody told me that that wasn't a possibility or that wasn't natural or normal to me, I really developed an ability, or I wouldn't say developed, I was just practicing our innate ability to listen to plants and to listen to the water and to listen to the animals and the wind. And that really became the first language that was kind of inspired my life. And then as I grew older, my mom took my brother and I away from the reservation, and off we went into school, where of course grammar lessons, they try to, you know, overtake my brain, but I definitely spent a little bit of time, you know, studying academia and forgetting about my roots, but my roots never forgot me. And once I realized that all the knowing wasn't going to be in books, so I went back to the plants and the wind and the animals, and that language was already there for me.
What a beautiful set of experiences you had in your early years to be so connected to nature. Say more about that, the meaning of your childhood and how you experienced the unseen realms then.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was more, it didn't feel different. I didn't know any different. So for me, to hear my ancestors talking to me and telling me stories, and I mean, I would just sit for long periods of time and I would listen to the wind, and I could hear drumming in the wind, and you know, there was nobody around, but I felt that in my body. And you know, nobody was sitting there being like, that's your ancestors playing the drum. I just assumed that that was what everybody was experiencing. And it wasn't actually until much later where I started to understand that everybody was communing with their elders, whether it be the ancestors of their human elders or their plant elders, in the same way. So for me, the natural development of my belief system and my paradigm was really about the relationship to all beings, not just the human beings. And I never actually put the human beings at the top of any hierarchy, because I didn't actually have access to human beings that were showing me that I could trust them more than I could trust the stones and the river. And so I think it was, it wasn't that I went to nature, it's just that I was in nature. And the development of my belief system, I think, is what happens when we're left alone for long periods of time in childhood, is that we find relationship where it's available. And for me, it was the prairie.
I know, Shane, that you had another stage in the development of your awareness of your gifts. And I believe that involved meeting with your father and having some conversations with him. Would you be willing to tell us a little bit about those experiences?
Sure. You know, like I had kind of alluded to, there was a period of time in which academia became sort of like the proving grounds of my validity in the world. And so I went to Smith College and studied literature and cognitive science and cognitive psychology and education. And I was really interested in trying to figure out what makes a human, and how do we know what we know, and more philosophical probably. And during that time, I was also trying to find text to prove what I was already experiencing, but I really couldn't there. I couldn't find it. And so after college, I kind of had I think many of us meet these lost times where our North Star just gets spun around and we get directionless for a little while. And that happened to me, and it was very dramatic. I was very sick for a good chunk of post-college years, nobody really knew what was going on with me. And during that time, you know, I was estranged from my father, I was estranged from my tribe, I was even estranged from my early securities, which was about land and plants. I forgot that because my nose was stuck in a book. And It was through a process of, well, therapy, that I started to kind of come clean with my therapist about having these knowings, hearing things and seeing things, and I having had not one experience with, a healer, a shaman, or even a massage therapist. I was completely in that zone of like, I must be going crazy, and now I'm going to admit this to my therapist, and I'm probably going to be committed. That was my fear. And I was kind of like vibrating so hard that when I confessed the fact that I could see and hear things that other people seemingly weren't seeing and hearing, I fell off my chair. And around that time of being really nervous about life and everything, I reconnected with my father, who lives in Alaska and is fully in his native ways. And I kind of went into the immersion process with him for 10 days in a night, a dark, dark time in Alaska during the winter time when there wasn't really any light. So we spent this, like, I feel like it was 10 days in an inipi, right? Because he had the heater like turned up so hot. I was like sweating all the time. It was so dark, and I was just like, who is this man, and what is this relationship? During that time, he started to tell me about things that he had experienced and practices in my own family lineage around medicine and vision and who my ancestors were, and what our lineage is about. We're from warriors and medicine people and survivors of wounded knee. And when he started explaining the practices of seeing and vision and bringing that vision to people, he pretty much said word for word what I had been experiencing most of my life. And I was just like, Dad, if you would have told me this, like, 20 years ago, I would have saved a lot of money in therapy. But there we went. So it was just for me, it was just that kind of affirmation. And I don't think everybody needs that, in order to be able to feel strong and claim the medicine bundle, what's in them. It just so happened that I was reconnected with my heritage through my father, and I was able to see that this lineage and this medicine was continuing through me regardless of my training, because up to then I was training my mind, I wasn't training my heart.
Well, I think one of the ideas behind your work, Shane, is that you provide a mentorship opportunity, both individually and collectively with the programs that you offer. And I think the inspiration for that is the lack of mentorship in this early time. Isn't that one of your callings now?
Oh, absolutely. My mentorship's called Under the Eagle's Wing. The eagle being, of course, the protector of the Lakota people, but also it was a strong desire in myself to have somebody, an elder, to kind of like recognize me, call me out, and put me under their wing and say, it's going to be okay. I'm going to show you the way. And that never really happened for me in terms of a human mentor. And that doesn't mean I didn't have that with my, ancestors, and plants and trees have certainly done that for me. But after practicing one-on-one medicine, traditional medicine, for about 10 years, I started to realize that everybody that was asking for, how do I connect with my guides? And am I making all of this up? So many people had the same question. And I realized, oh, I just need to put you all in the same room so that you can hear that you're actually not alone. And, there was a desire in me to help people feel what I actually needed to feel, which was seen in the world, and somebody that I could tell the stories and they could hear the stories, and I could, I have that now. I have elders in my life, but when I was up and coming as a somebody who wanted to understand what was happening and seeing if that was of service, I deeply desired that. So I give what I desire, and it's the last 10 years have been a remarkable journey of collaboration and co-mentorship with the trees. And I'm not the mentor, human mentor, but I'm definitely facilitating that permission to say, yes, you do know. If you just allow yourself to sit and listen, that is part of your birthright to hear the plants as well.
I love that concept of co-mentorship. I'm not sure that I've really heard that before, but truly, if your path is to awaken people to a broader, deeper connection with the spirit world, that would be a part of it, a co-teaching arrangement. Say more about that if you would.
Yeah, I mean, there's a word in Lakota, Konglesh Gawonkin. It's the sacred hoop. Within that, there's these values. Mitakio Oisin is one of them, which is all my relations, which does not just mean all my relations being human relations, but it's all my relations, all beingness. We are in this relationship together, and part of the mentorship is kind of moving away from more of a colonized idea of mentorship or being a teacher in which one person holds that power, but instead of saying, well, we all are actually here learning from each other, and we all have something to offer, and it's not just just us as our human selves, but we also learn from, I mean, I learn all the time from the trees just outside my house, and that if we allow ourselves to shift our paradigm from what teacher and mentor means, and to understand that we are both our mentor and mentee, as long as we're including the entire Konglesh Gawonkin, the entire hoop of being. And I feel like it makes our experience much more rich and dynamic. And it also allows us to not feel so much pressure that we have to know everything because we can't. We're not meant to. We're meant to be relational with each other. And so for me, co-mentorship and collaboration is the sign of a balanced hoop.
One thing that you speak about, Shane, is that you're willing to share Lakota ceremony and engage in ceremony, but not to teach it per se, more to provide a container for people's own explorations.
Right. Yeah, it's very important to me that let's see how to say this. It's important for me that what I'm offering is not for somebody to just experience maybe like my culture, right? I'm going to come from that because that's who I am. That's how I know how to hold space for these opportunities of awareness and connection. So the container that I know how to do and what I've learned and what I've been shown is coming from a lens of the Lakota because I am Lakota, right? But in that, my explicit not just desire but instruction is that it is the container so that each individual is given the opportunity to be still enough to listen to the heartbeat of their own indigenous practices, no matter if that comes from something like 5 generations ago or if that's coming from 2,000 years ago, that it is in the mineral of our blood and we can hear that and it can be instructive. And so the idea is not to pass my particular ceremonies and rituals to other people, unless of course we're from the same tribe, but to really offer the space for others to investigate, be curious, and feel safe enough to do that deep work. Because obviously, if we could just do it, we would do it, right? But sometimes it's the concentration of ceremony and intention and the use of plant medicines that bring us into that deeper awareness of who am I and what do I have to offer, not just in our blood ancestry, but in our spiritual ancestry as well.
When you say, Shane, that we all have indigenous roots, when you guide your people who come to you to deeply listen to their own indigenous selves, what kinds of experiences are they having? What are they discovering in the process of deep listening?
It's so rich and so varied, you know. So the first year of mentorship is really about balancing the hoop within themselves, which means that we do ceremonies to clear or to, you know, to investigate the places that we may be holding imbalance. And so that might be a place where we're holding fear or shame or anger or grief, disillusionment. And so we're doing ceremonies specifically to open up that memory that's in the body, or in the case of many people, it's transgenerational traumas that they're holding in their body that's preventing them from being able to really see the radiance and magnificence of their own self. And so we're doing this process of clearing, examining, looking, processing, releasing. And in those ceremonies, sometimes people have these, you know, deepening awakenings of, this is where I've been holding back, or I didn't know I was holding this much grief in my body, or I was in this ceremony and all of a sudden I felt this grandmotherly energy come to me, and I didn't realize how much I was missing eldership in my life. I mean, these are just very small examples, but it is so rich and is so diverse as the people that, you know, come to sit with me in these ceremonies.
Would you say that people from time to time, Shane, are discovering their own deep ceremonies themselves within the container you offer?
That is my hope and my desire and my wish. And yes, I mean, that is, I see it happening for people, where the idea is that we hold the container, this hoop, but then they go out in their communities and they create these hoops, right? And then they start creating intentional containers for healing within their families and their hoops based on their own medicine, you know, not recreating something that we've done together, but it's coming from their own inspirations, intuitions, and deep wisdom from their ancestral bodies. For example, in my tradition, when we're communing or talking with the plants, we might offer a shashasha, which is call it native tobacco. It's from the red willow tree. And that's sort of like that's something we do. So in a ceremony that somebody who's graduated from Eagle School told me about, she felt like, well, I wanted to offer something from my traditions, but I don't really even know what my tradition is. I don't know what the offering is. But just sitting with the plants, she just started to sing and to hum, and the song came forward. And she just said, that was my most sacred offering that I could come up with. And then she started doing some research into, she has Scandinavian roots, and she started doing some research and discovered that Song was so much part of the offering that they would give in their times of ritual and ceremony. It came through her. It wasn't from her mental mind of research. It was actually in her body. She just had to trust that there was that it was okay for her to allow that to come forward. So the idea here is that everybody would take those steps of courage to believe themselves as they're practicing listening and being.
This must be so satisfying to you, Shane, to lead people or to guide people or provide the container for folks to find their own way, to discover their own medicine. I can see how that would be a very inspiring calling. Is this what you, the core of your work?
Well, and I just to be clear, Wake, I'm participating in that ceremony too. So it is like, you know what I mean? I would like to say, like, I can just hold this and have the, yes, it's very pleasurable. And yes, it makes me feel so happy to be in ceremony with other people who desire to be in ceremony with me. But I am also participating every single year in that work, and it's not always easy. And sometimes it's quite painful. But I also know that being in community, doing intentional work, is it is the practice of belonging fills my heart. And also, you know, there are times where I need to not hold the container and feel more held. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the Shaman's Directory is the way that I actually was invited into it was to be in a space where other Indigenous healers were holding just a talking circle. And it was amazing for me to be with other practitioners around the world in a way that I could recognize, you know, that was not from my Indigenous community, but it was recognizable to me. And I felt so held. And so anytime I get to participate by either showing up to community or offering the container for community, I do feel like we're all fulfilling our purpose then.
One thing that's very interesting to me is your expression of a sacred hoop. And I think in a way that Shaman's Directory is also that. It's creating a container or creating a way that we can all be a part of something and have that awareness and mutual support that we're offering our medicine in the world and that we're held in some way by one another.
Yes.
Does that speak to you about aspects of the sacred hoop?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is this other concept in Lakota called Kapemni, which is the sacred hoop, which is more like, Kapemni is more like the sacred teepee structure inverted up to the heavens, right? So that as we're in this hoop, the teepee is in a hoop, right? That as we are in community, so are the stars, right? The stars above are also in community, and we move together, we dance together. So as above, below is another way of saying that. And containers such as the Shaman's Directory, I believe that what is so valuable about that and what resonates with me about it is that it is creating another hoop here in the matar, or the material of our earthly selves, which with the intention of dancing with the ancestors and the spirits above. And in that place where they meet, that place is really the it's the patar, the patterning coming into the matar of the matter, which is the poetry of our beingness, our human selves and our spiritual selves. And the more that we can create these hoops or these sacred containers, it is a beacon of belonging for all beings, right? It's not like here we're just in our exclusive language of healingship. It's really saying, no, like everybody belongs here. All beings belong here. We are all related. And yeah, so I feel like my paradigm of belonging and creating these sacred hoops is what drew me to the Shaman's Directory, because I see that that's what's happening there.
I have this feeling that we're holding one another in the expression of our work. And I could see that you provide that recognition of medicine, indigenous medicine, no matter how far back, and the encouragement to go more deeply. And I think that's a great gift in itself, to get that support and encouragement to find one's own way and to express one's own medicine. I feel that you provide a tremendous service in that regard by allowing, I think I would say allowing people to discover their own and providing safety for that journey.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the more that people feel seen and feel held, the safer they feel. And when we already know through, you know, cognitive science that we need to feel safe in order to explore the places that we can create and collaborate and feel connected in innovative ways as a human species. And so what is it that each individual needs in order to feel that safety? Well, belonging is part of that. And belonging is actually a practice of noticing, oh, I belong here in this world. I belong here in the community of all that is.
I understand, Shane, that one of the ways to begin working with you is to schedule a one-on-one session. And yeah, that you prefer that than going into directly into your mentorship program. Could you describe what someone might experience or what your approach is for an initial session with someone who is seeking you?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, I want to say all kinds of people come and hang out with me in this way, you know, on the phone or in person. There's not one thing that I would say that would surprise me that people would bring as like questions. And you know, anything people bring, from physical ailments to like spiritually, what am I doing? How do I connect with my guides, to, oh no, my marriage is falling apart, or you know, work, life, health, relationships, everything. You know, it's all welcome. So the first part, when we're doing a one-on-one session, the first part is somebody's medicine story. They get to say, this is what I'm churning inside, or this is where I need illumination. And that's a really important part of the exchange, is the articulation of where they're suffering. That's part of the medicine, to release it by speaking of it. And then after they've said what they want to say, then we do a guided meditation, which is really, it's my prayer to their guides to listen to this medicine story and come and be with them in a way that is going to not just quell their anxious thoughts, but actually start doing the energetic work, the emotional work, the spiritual work that helps to loosen the knots inside so that they can see and feel possibility and direction. So it's very energetic. And then I call their guides and I give them a description of to my best ability of how their guides are showing up. Some of those guides are ancestors, some of those guides, honestly, I've met so many different guides, thousands and thousands of guides. It's kind of blown my mind sometimes, you know, I'm like, I don't know, this is the wind, or this is a being that's never been on Earth, or, oh, look at that, this person is actually your great grandfather, or whatever, you know, there's a lot of different ways that guides come. But my practice is really to just let the guide speak, through me. So it's like reading a love letter from their guide to them and letting them to hear it and absorb what they can. And then some, you know, they can ask questions at the end. Then we close the session, and I, well, the guides and I craft a medicine, which is plant spirit medicine, which is the indigenous process of making medicine that is addressing the spiritual emotional aspects. And so I send it to them, and they take that for about a month to help integrate whatever it is that we worked with in a session. And then we're complete.
I'm wondering about your guides. I'm intrigued by your description of so many different types of guides. And I'm not wanting you to reveal anything that you feel uncomfortable with. I'm simply asking, for you, what kind of guidance is valuable, or what consistently feeds you or runs through you? Would you be willing to speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I have guides that I have seen since birth, you know, and it just took me a while to realize that other people weren't seeing those guides. One of the guides I just call the professor. That's really the guide that's all has since I was in my early 20s, was basically being like, do this, do that, do this. And I've done my practice exactly how this particular guide instructed from when I was 20. So it's been a long time, decades. But the guides that I work with for my own personal development, well, Tokyo Manwani Win, which is my great-great-grandmother, who is the survivor of Wounded Knee. Sometimes I'm like, is she really my guide, or am I a continuation of her? Because a lot of times it feels like I'm a continuation of her. She feels so inside of me. I feel so intimate with her that it doesn't feel separate to me. But I do call upon her as a helper. And you know, even, I mean, you know, my mom is German-American. I was born in Germany, but for some reason, I've tried so hard to connect with that ancestry, and I'm always turned away. And I think it's just in this lifetime, maybe there will be a time when that is changed. But right now, the guides that come for me all the time are the guides that are actually in my Lakota heritage. They're telling me the stories so that we don't forget them. I'm listening to the sound of the language so that I can relearn that. I'm listening to the ways in which they tell me to do the ceremony. I'm listening to the way that they tell me to be with the drum. These are my teachers. And anytime I'm with plants and the mineral kingdom and the mineral people, the stone people, I am nourished, and they are my guides on this planet.
When you speak of your great great grandmother, I feel the affection and the connection. And I believe one translation of her name is the one who leads first. Mm-hmm. Could you say yourself, Shane, how you embody your great-great-grandmother's spirit?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So her Anglicanized name was Jenny on the Lead, or Jenny Leads First, which was because she was the first person to lead the when there was walk. So that walk and that ride to Wounded Knee, Jenny would have been, Tokyo Manwani Win would have been first. She was also the daughter of the chief of the Minakoja people. And for me, you know, it's been a really interesting experience. The firstborn daughter off the reservation since the reservation was invented, and having a German mother and a Lakota father, you know, it's just like I feel at times that my experience of being mixed race, it is a calling for me to be able to be in the world outside of the reservation, and bringing the gifts that I think Tokio Manwaniwin would have wanted to bring, and then serving my tribe by returning and working with the youth and working with the tradition and making traditional medicines. And I feel like when I have that struggle, that internal struggle and doubt, because I'm not living on the reservation, and you know, I am like participating with privilege outside of the reservation, that I struggle sometimes with, am I meant to be doing this? Why am I doing this? And I hear and feel her hands on my shoulders steadying me, and it's not just a reassurance, it's a guidance, and telling me, this is exactly how you are meant to come, and this is exactly how it is meant to be. So just be here, and it's okay. And I call upon her in those times of doubt quite often.
Thank you so much for sharing those heartfelt expressions of your experience. I know that part of your work you call a service project, which is with native plants, making plant and mineral essences, going back to the tribal lands and working with the children and the older people there. The elders. Could you express more about what your calling is in this service project?
By far it is my greatest privilege and passion to be able to work with the plant elders on the land that is so sacred to my people, you know, and to learn from them by being there. I go every year. I just came back from a medicine making trip. And part of it is being in sacred places. So there are 7 sacred places to the Lakota people, being there during high ceremony times. So around the Sundance times in the summer, and just sitting with the plant elders and the stone elders, and being able to listen to their stories about, I mean, some of these roots and these seeds precede human life, right? And so they know the whole patterns of our human suffering, and to be in their presence, and then to be given permission to make medicine from them, which, by the way, making spirit medicine is it's like making flower essences. It's the water, it's the spiritual contact. So you know, I can make 13 million doses from one plant, so it's conserving them, but then writing about it to teach other people about it, because it's not just the plant, it's the plant's relationship to the land and to the other beings and to the history that is contained in that medicine. And then sometimes bringing, if it's, you know, whatever youth are available at the time, bringing the youth into that process. I love working with the children. You know, pre-COVID, it was much more available to me, but it's starting to open back up again. But working with the children who are so natural at medicine making, if you ask a child, what is that plant for? They'll look at it, they'll say, oh, that's for my happiness. You know what I mean? There is no delay. There's no doubt in it. They are such beautiful medicine makers. And so making this medicine and then giving it to them, giving it to their families. But also there's opportunities when there's, you know, indigenous foods will go out to elders. And when I get to add in these medicines made from that land, from these native plants, it is, it's a reconnection. You know, the elders in the human body get to be reconnected with the elders of the plant body, because let's, be clear, cultural genocide is real, and there is a very huge pain between our traditions and also how people are living in rural reservations. And so to have the energetic reconnection from a plant elder to just the spirit, the heart of the human who has suffered lifetimes of disconnect is, it is a passion of mine. And, it is, I don't know, I could speak probably for hours about it, but that's a little something about it.
I mean, I'm sure the tribal members who see you year after year are so pleased for your return and your involvement.
I mean, it is really wonderful to have these relationships that have come over the years. And also, I'll say that it's taken years and years to develop some of those relationships to the point where now I'm receiving some of the stories from the elders, because my dedication to be there is evident. And so, part of my work as a storyteller is to be a listener to the stories so that I can tell them.
I'm going to ask this question. You may not be ready to share the answer. Are you thinking of writing about your experiences, or is there a certain aspect of your work that most inspires you now to share in the written form?
Great question. I am working on a piece right now that is told from the kind of an intertwining of the ancient Lakota oral history mythology with modern day story and how it connects and intersects and relatable to our future selves. And so that is a piece that I've been working on and I'm dedicating for the next 30 days. I'll enter into the sacred hoop of writers and storytellers.
So these are stories primarily that you've heard on your journeys back to your homeland?
Yeah, they come from those stories. And then some of the stories are restored from listening for decades, just listening to the ancestral spirits to tell me the stories, like what have we lost? They'll tell me the stories. And so some of them are remembered stories, and some of them are spoken stories told to me.
Yeah. I'm sure you have your own stories to tell back, but what a beautiful calling that you have. And I'm sure that what comes from this will be very deep. And I hope that we get an opportunity to read some of your stories or hear you tell them even better.
Yeah, I am definitely working on it. Yeah.
Part of the mentorship program, Shane, is making these plants and mineral essences and deepening our relationship with guides, working on our service to the world. What would one might experience in a mentorship program that you offer?
Yeah, because of technology and global pandemic, things have just shifted so much. It used to be only in person, and now we have a good mix of like in person and online, which I never thought we could do traditional ceremony online. And I've had elders get online and like be like, okay, we're doing this, and I was like, okay, like this can happen. So what to expect would be kind of a mix of some like direct teaching, then quite a bit of journeying and meditation, then a lot of experiential learning, going out, making medicine, coming back and telling the story of what happened. There's a fair amount of that internal work through taking plant medicines and being with the mineral people to understand those deeper layers of like what we bring and why we're imbalanced in some ways. And then the community sharing is a big part of that. Everybody who is in the mentorship program, of course, gets some one-on-one time with me as well.
And I hear it's well attended, and I hope you'll continue offering it. I do understand, however, that you prefer to have people connect with you directly and have that initial experience with you before even applying to the mentorship program to make sure it's a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would, you know, not everybody is going to resonate with me. There's many teachers in the world. There's many people who hold space in the world. And my strongest desire is that people feel resonance, you know, like that they feel a certain kind of excitement and safety in my presence, and also experience, you know, the medicine that I offer, so that they know what they're getting themselves into, because it's intimate to spend a year with other people and myself if there isn't a resonance. And so it's really nice to be able to meet somebody, do a one-on-one session, have them talk to their guides a little bit to see if this is even something that is up for them or would be helpful for them or not. So and then also it helps me understand how the balancing of the community is taking shape too.
Are there other things that you'd like people to know, or is there something that you'd like to offer that we haven't dealt with yet?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my, if I were to speak to you directly listening to this right now, I would just want to encourage you to feel and to know that no matter what your circumstances are, no matter what your background or your history is, that you have a right to express your particular medicine in this world, and it is absolutely needed. And you don't have to be alone in it. You can actually be in community, whether it's in, you know, my mentorship or somebody else's offering here on the Shaman's Directory, that you don't have to be alone in wondering if you have a purpose. You do have a purpose. And sometimes it just needs to be reflected back to somebody who's smiling with their eyes back at you, so that you can see the radiance that you already are and develop those ways that you would like to be accessible and communicate to the people in your community. So I just want to invite people to be in community and to believe in themselves and to trust that what comes through them as an offering of connection is needed and valued.
Thank you so much. What perfect guidance for everyone to hear. And we're also encouraged to listen more carefully to nature, to look for opportunities to be of service, and to be in relationship with one another. I really honor your presence, your willingness to share your work with us here, and your call to service in a very big and multidimensional way.
Well, Pila, thank you, Wake.
Shane has generously offered the gift of an hour and a half talk and meditative experience entitled Ancestral Storytelling and Meditation, Reclaiming Wisdom Through Connection. The meditation guides you to reach back, meeting your own ancestors. For all those who are watching, make sure to scroll down where you will find a link to this gift, or contact Shane directly through her web address.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to all those who are listening. Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've been inspired. How could you not? I want to thank you so much, Shane Case, for your time today, for your willingness, and for all you offer to the world. And to all of those of you who have been listening and watching, thank you so much for your presence, and we look forward to seeing you around the sacred fire. Thank you.